We're excited to have a very special guest for today's episode of 80s Wrestling the Podcast, WWE Hall of Famer and legend, the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. You can catch Ted live this Wednesday, April 7th from 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern on his Facebook page. Ted will be doing a WrestleMania-themed question and answer session. It's free and open to fans who follow his page. And since WrestleMania 4 was Ted's first WrestleMania, he's choosing four questions from four different followers who will each win a free autograph from the Million Dollar Man. The Q&A session is open to his fans from around the world. Follow Ted on Facebook at facebook.com/MDM Ted DiBiase. Ted will also be appearing at WrestleCon in Tampa Bay, Florida on April 9th and 10th in person, and he will be doing a virtual appearance on April 11th. For more information, follow Ted on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram with the verified username of @MDM Ted DiBiase. Ladies and gentlemen, we are on the road to WrestleMania, and this is 80s Wrestling the Podcast, and we're the only show where wearing shoulder pads with spikes constitutes a casual Friday in the office. My name is Jumping Jay, and as always, I'm joined by the Titan of 80s Wrestling Trivia. He went 5 for 5 last week. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back, Mr. Tommy Fierro.
Hey, Jay, what's going on, man? How are you?
Tommy, I am doing absolutely fantastic. I am beyond excited for today's episode.
Without further ado, man, this is a big one today. We are on the road to WrestleMania. WrestleMania will be a two-day event next weekend, Saturday and Sunday, April 10th and the 11th. And what better guest to have on the show tonight, Jay, than someone that is not only one of the biggest wrestling icons ever, but one of the biggest WrestleMania icons ever. And we are joined by WWE Hall of Famer, the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. Ted, welcome to 80s Wrestling the Podcast.
Hey, great to be with you guys this morning. You bet.
Great to have you. And as we said off the air, Ted, everyone is excited and ready for WrestleMania. It's in the air. As it gets this close to WrestleMania, everyone gets excited, both the fans, the wrestlers, everyone involved in the wrestling business. And what we would like to do today with you, Ted, is, I mean, your career is just so unbelievable that we wouldn't be able to cover everything on an episode. So I thought it'd be fun to talk about some of your WrestleMania memories and moments, since WrestleMania is next weekend. And, Jay, not that many people out there can say that they, you know, closed the show at WrestleMania. And Ted was one of them in his first WrestleMania, WrestleMania 4. Jay, what are some of your memories of that?
My biggest thing when it comes to WrestleMania 4 and Mr. DiBiase is not only did he close the show, but he wrestled multiple times on that card. He wrestled three different matches in this tournament. So not only is it his first WrestleMania, but his face is seen on that show so many times. What a rush that must have been. I can't wait to hear from the man himself what that experience was like.
Real quick, I wanted to ask you before you talk about your WrestleMania 4 memories, is obviously you were in the business for a long time leading up to your return to WWF. You were there earlier in your career. What was it like going into WrestleMania 4? Now, you came back to the WWF shortly after WrestleMania 3. And it's a global phenomenon now. What was it like for you to compete in your first WrestleMania?
Well, I mean, obviously, it was a thrill. And, you know, there was with wrestling, you know, we wrestled so much. I mean, you know, guys like, it's like, we were on the road, like 21 days in 21 cities. And so it's not like a, I guess, basketball has, you know, more than one game a week. In baseball, like, but wrestling, it's like every day. But WrestleMania, yeah, it's like there's a little more stress, especially like you said, Tommy. I've only been in the company a few months now, and I'm gonna basically headline this WrestleMania, and it's my first one. So I felt a little bit of stress, if you will. But I guess, you know, the build up to WrestleMania, let's go back to the Saturday night main event, which was the setup for WrestleMania 4. Saturday night main event took place, and it was the first time that professional wrestling was back on national network television since the 1950s. You know, and what an accomplishment for Vince McMahon and the company. And the headliner that night was Hulk versus Andre the Giant, and it's the first time since WrestleMania 3, which, by the way, set an indoor attendance record of 93,000 people. It's the first time that they had actually got in the ring and faced each other, and so it was a big deal. But the storyline was that, you know, me being a million-dollar man, I had bragged that I could buy anything, including the world title. Andre was going to whip Hogan, and I'm going to be, you know, by purchasing the title, the new champion. Of course, we all know that that's part of the show. That's part of show business. And but that's what happened that night. You know, I didn't even know that there was two Hebner brothers. I didn't know that there were two guys that looked just alike. Anyway, it was pretty cool. The twin referee slides in and counts Hogan down, and you know, Andre puts the belt around my waist, and I wear it for a couple of weeks, and then they go, okay, you are not really the champion, so you know, quit wearing the belt. We can't give it back to Andre, who technically won the match because he's been bought off and paid off, and so we can't give it back to Hogan because he lost the title. And so what do we do? And that's where they came up with the idea, okay, let's have a tournament to crown a new champion, which was WrestleMania 4. And you're right, I wrestled three times that night. You know, I wrestled Jim Duggan and what was the other guy? Don Morocco. So I wrestled those two guys and then ended up in the last match. You know, Randy Savage. And that was actually, the other thing about that was, I think Randy and I had only maybe had one other match, you know, in terms of, you know, being familiar with your opponent. We had only had maybe one other match. And I don't know, it's one of my favorite WrestleManias, even though it was, but the stress of having three matches in one event, and that event being a WrestleMania, yeah, it's definitely a day I'll never forget. But that WrestleMania 4 basically just was the springboard going forward, you know, for the Million Dollar Man character as a whole, because for about the next year, I was traveling all over the country in all these different places, and I was having matches, you know, tag team matches, a lot of tag team matches with Andre, with various opponents, you know, me and Andre against, you know, Hogan and Savage, you know, Hogan and somebody. And so it was really exciting for me. And again, then, you know, then the next WrestleMania was in the same building. I it was kind of like like WrestleMania 3's, you know, in this great big building, 93,000 people see it, and then the next year it's in this much smaller arena I think Donald Trump owns that building, and I think it's where they I don't know, they still do the Miss America pageant there. I mean, but they used to do that in that building in Atlantic City, but it wasn't nearly as big. That was the only I was thinking, wow, you know, this is going to be this huge crowd. And then I was kind of, wow, you know, we went from a 93,000 people arena to to this, which wasn't nearly as big, but the pay-per-view audience was huge.
WrestleMania 4 is the tournament mania, which was different structure-wise than the previous three. Can you just give us a little bit of insight? When you have one WrestleMania match to prepare for, that's enough stress for a performer to be thinking about one match. Can you talk to us about the mental preparation that you had to do going into that night, knowing that you had three different matches with three different opponents who had three very different styles, and yet all three of your matches were fantastic? How do you prepare for something like that?
Well, you know, it's old school, Tommy. I mean, it's kind of like, I don't know how the guys today prepare for matches, because back in that time, you know, this is the, you know, and I hear this from fans all the time, the guys like me who came from the late 80s and early 90s, we learned our trade by doing it. You know, it was like if you went to and there weren't a lot of wrestling schools back then. It was somebody in the business that would bring you in. You know, it was very closed. It wasn't like, well, anybody can go become a pro wrestler. There was a lot of respect you had for the older guys. But back then, to be honest, Tommy, the only thing that I ever knew going into the ring was the finish. Now, exactly how it's going to end. Now, if I had history with a wrestler, if I had been in a program and we had wrestled a couple times, it might be like, okay, since this is what the people saw last, maybe it would be good for us to start this way tonight. So I might have a beginning for that match. And then I knew the end. But everything else in the middle of that match was all done organically. It was call it on the fly. And basically, in preparation for that, I was very familiar with Jim Duggan, because Jim and I had worked together in Mid-South many, many, many times. So Jim was no problem. But Don Morocco was a different guy with a different style, you know, kind of the big man style. And basically I just, you know, knowing he was going to be one of the guys I watched, I just watched him. I just made it a point at different shows to watch him and familiarize myself with his style, so that when we got in the ring that, you know, we could do the dance, so to speak. And everything, I was I was excited about WrestleMania 4, but I'm gonna tell you something. I was really glad when it was over. Oh man, the stress was off. But
now, Ted,
before
we get into WrestleMania 5, I want to ask you real quickly. Now, when you first heard about the formation of WrestleMania back in 1985. Obviously, there was rumblings all around the wrestling world, and this was a huge gamble by Vince McMahon. What was your initial reaction when you first heard about them doing the first WrestleMania in 1985?
Well, you know, I was raised in the wrestling business, and I was raised old school. And, you know, when I first started watching the show, and saw some of the stuff they were doing, I was like, you know, they're killing the business. But reality is that Vince McMahon took professional wrestling, which it, you know, up until that time, it was very regional, and it was pretty much, I would call it blue collar crowd entertainment. You weren't going to see a lot of people in khaki pants and polo shirts at the wrestling matches. You know, it was a rough crowd. But he made it family entertainment, and he pointed it towards the kids, you know, and, Hulk Hogan, here's your big, you know, Andre the Giant, you know, here's your bigger than life characters, who you can love and who you can hate. And, it was really a stroke of genius, but, you know, I was, I was of the mind that, you know, gosh, you know, this is going to destroy wrestling. And it was just the opposite. And, you know, I was in Japan when WrestleMania 3 took place. And I can still remember getting a newspaper, you know, in Japan and saying, you know, WrestleMania, you know, sets indoor world attendance record. And Tommy, I'm going to tell you what, right then and there, I said, I've got to be there if I'm going to be a part of wrestling anymore, because I could, that was the switch for me. It was like, if I'm going to stay in the business, and if I'm going to be meaningful in this business, then I'm going to have to work for that company, because it was obvious to me if Vince McMahon could do that, that all the territories would be in trouble and they wouldn't last very long. And I'll be honest with you, if Vince hadn't done what he did, and if he hadn't made wrestling what it is today, you know, professional wrestling, it might still be around somewhat. But with everything else that's out there buying for the entertainment dollar, and now you've got, you know, 100 different stations on television that you can watch. There's so much competing for the entertainment dollar that, you know, I think, you know, pro wrestling might have died. It certainly isn't dead, you know, and I'm just being real honest with you guys and all the fans listening. I am not real familiar with a lot of the new talent because I'm busy doing other things, but I always get excited about WrestleMania because it takes me back. And I know that there's a little something in the future because this guy with NXT, he's the new money guy. You know, I might have to show up somewhere and teach him a lesson. Cameron Grimes, you know, he might get a visit.
I'll tell you what, Ted, wrestling is definitely not dead, and you're a huge reason because of that, for the foundation that you and so many others laid in the 1980s. Now I want to move to WrestleMania 5 real quickly. I want to make mention that you talked about how the WrestleMania 4 and 5 building was much smaller than WrestleMania 3, and obviously it was. But WWF did such a fantastic job of their camera angles. They made that ramp, when you guys walked down to the ring for 4 and 5, they made it look so larger than life, that arena, even though it was really small, because I've been in there before, and it is a very small arena. But WWF did an amazing job, their camera angles, to make that arena look a lot bigger than it actually was. Now, WrestleMania 5, you're up against Brutus the Barber Beefcake. I want to make mention real quickly, a lot of people don't give Brutus Beefcake the credit that he deserves. And me and Jay talk about it here on the podcast every now and again, of how big of a star he was during that whole period. Now, here you are, WrestleMania 5. At this point, you're unquestionably the top, you know, heel or one of the top two or three heels in the company. And you got to have someone against that top heel and that the fans care about. And obviously, Brutus fit that role perfectly. Obviously, he's not as technically sound as a wrestler or you or some of the others, but he was over as Rover like anybody else was during that time frame. What are some of your memories of working with Brutus and how popular he was during that time frame?
Well, you know, I agree with everything that you just said. And again, Brutus was one of those guys who wasn't like, you know, somebody that I'm going to get in the ring with and be doing a lot of technical wrestling, a lot of, you know, on the mat and, you know, reverse this and reverse that. You know, he was, you know, I would call him, he was more in the line of a kick and punch guy. But, you know, to his credit, you know, the whole thing about this is, and when I talk to young wrestlers, you know, like there have been guys, matter of fact, Kelly Kaniski, who was Gene Kaniski's son, who also went to West Texas State, like a number of other guys who came out of West Texas State, including myself, became wrestlers, largely due to the influence of the Funk family. But Kelly, I could watch Kelly, and Kelly would do he would be, everything that he did was technically, it was sound. Technically, it was okay. But the thing that Kelly didn't have, that you have to have, is charisma. You can't teach charisma. You either have it or you don't. And unfortunately, Kelly didn't really have it, you know, and his wrestling career didn't really go anywhere. But again, the thing that made Brutus bigger than life was his charisma. And, as a matter of fact, I'm going to be signing autographs this weekend in Long Island. I can't remember exactly where, but you can probably go on the website and find it. But Brutus is going to be there, and so is Greg Valentine. But yeah, you know, Brutus and I did the dance, it was fun. And again, it was one of those things. It wasn't, and of course, a lot less pressure on me than the year before, because I've got one match. That's all I have to worry about. You know, like I'm not in the main event, and of course, there's always, I guess, I don't care who you are, and I don't care how many times a guy gets in the ring, but when it is WrestleMania, you know, this is your marquee event for the company. You always want to make it special, and you always want to do your best. Did we plan anything? Not really. We got what we were supposed to do and how it was supposed to end. And we talked over maybe a couple of things, but again, if you're a student of the business, and that's what I did, I watched, especially the couple of weeks going into or just before WrestleMania, I made it a point to watch Brutus's matches to give me an idea of how our two styles could work together, and I think we pulled it off pretty good.
Say, Ted, everybody knows that now WrestleMania is an entire week of promotions, media coverage, the performer schedules are just jam-packed with different things. Can you talk a little bit, what did a WrestleMania week or the build-up look for you guys back during this time period? Were you in different towns the night before hustling to get to Mania, or was it the same kind of week-long promotions and media coverage that we see today?
It wasn't that back then, I can't remember exactly what it was, but I do. Well, I remember this, that prior to WrestleMania 4, for example, I had been home, and my wife had given birth to my youngest son, Brett. Brett was born in March of 1988, and so I was home and I was with my wife. My son was born, and I got on a plane and I flew to New York to go to Atlantic City for WrestleMania. But no, there wasn't. It grew into that. It evolved into what it is today, this week long event, kind of like, you know, other like the Super Bowl, you know, for football, you know, like a lot of other sports are doing the same thing, where it's not just that day and that event, it's the whole build up to it, it's the anticipation for the event.
And just to give the fans who are listening an idea, the schedule now for superstars who are actively on the roster isn't the only schedule that's jam-packed this week. Legends like Mr. Ted DiBiase, you have a full schedule yourself, sir. I have your schedule or part of it pulled up in front of me, and I just want to let people know that you have a full road to WrestleMania yourself. In fact, this Wednesday, April 7th, from 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time, the Million Dollar Man, you will be doing a WrestleMania-themed Q&A on your Facebook page. And the best part of all is this question and answer session is free and open to any fan who actively follows your Facebook page. And since WrestleMania 4, what we were just talking about, was your first Mania appearance, you are doing something very cool for fans of pro wrestling. You are choosing four questions from four different followers, each of who will win an autograph from you just for being chosen in this Q&A. The Q&A session is open to everybody. Follow, if you don't follow the Million Dollar Man on social media, you need to for daily content, but for especially for cool giveaways like this. Your Facebook page is facebook.com/MDM for the Million Dollar Man, of course. MDM Ted DiBiase. That's your Facebook handle. Same handle used on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Ted, that is a very cool thing you are doing for fans of professional wrestling. A live Q&A with the Million Dollar Man.
Well, you know, again, it's if it weren't for fans, you know, I wouldn't be anybody. That's what I said. If it weren't for the people who come and support us, you know, I wouldn't have had a job. So it's always nice to be able to, you know, the Million Dollar Man is not totally Scrooge. So it's like, you know, like it might shock some people that the Million Dollar Man would actually give something away. So, but this is going to be fun, and I can't wait to do it.
And then not only are you doing that, but then you're taking off to Tampa Bay, and you'll be in Florida April 9th and 10th doing an in-person signing, and then you have a virtual signing on April 11th. So your WrestleMania week schedule is filling up as well.
Yes, yes, it's filling up big, and I'm looking forward to it. You know, I don't know, and the interesting thing this year is like, and I'm not there, and I'm not, I haven't talked to anybody. I'm not just real sure how they, you know, they're pulling this thing off, but to, you know, to actually hold the event over 2 days, that's something that's never been done before, you know? And so they're doing, you know, in the Buck Stadium there, they're doing the event Saturday, and they're doing it on Sunday as well. I don't know, and you may know what the roster looks like, what those matches are on each day, but that's, you know, that's another way, you know, it's kind of like, okay, because of the pandemic and everything, we can't have as many people there, but I think it's pretty cool that a company would go ahead and say, okay, you know, so we can make it available to more fans. We won't just do 1 day. We'll do 2 days. I think that's pretty cool.
Absolutely, Ted. It definitely is. Next up, what I want to talk about is probably one of my favorite matches that you were in, WrestleMania 6, and the build-up and lead to someone else that is iconic in this industry like yourself, and that's Jake the Snake Roberts. On paper, you look at that, you see they're two of the biggest names in the history of 80s wrestling, Jake the Snake Roberts and the Million Dollar Man. And the promos back and forth leading up to this match were absolutely fantastic. What was your memories of working with Jake at WrestleMania 6 and the whole build-up to get you there?
Well, you know, I tell a lot of people, I said, you know, when I think about WrestleMania and I think about, you know, my favorite matches, Jake's, you know, at the top of the list. I mean, you know, we weren't the main event, but I mean, we were definitely a significant match that night. But it's just, I mean, even before, I mean, Jake and I met Jake when I first started wrestling in Mid-South. His father, whose wrestling name was Grizzly Smith, was like the road agent for Cowboy Bill Watts, who was the owner of Mid-South Wrestling. And I actually met Jake when he first started, you know, they started him out refereeing. I mean, and so I remember one night we were doing something, you know, and he was doing the refereeing, and I told him, I said, hit me. I said, what? He said, I said, hit me. And he hauled off and hit me. Jake and I, you know, our relationship goes back a long way, and God bless him. You know, I was there with him through a lot of the rough years of his life, a lot of the things that you know, that bring guys down, and he survived it. He survived it. He came out, you know, on top, and he's thriving again. And that just, you know, that's a credit to him. But as a wrestler, I mean, there's not too many guys that I would rank higher than him in terms of his understanding of the psychology of what we do, and absolutely phenomenal on the mic. Oh my gosh. You know, it's like, you know, I give kudos to Jake. I think Jake does better interviews than I do. And the doing the dance for us, it was easy. You know, somebody would ask, what's your toughest match? Well, a tough match would be to get in the ring and work with somebody that's hard, that's not as, I don't know the word to use, doesn't understand as well, doesn't have the savvy as much, but to do the dance with Jake was like a night off. I mean, that's one of my favorite matches of WrestleMania. And trying to think, there was somebody sitting at ringside. There was like a movie star. I can't remember who it was, but that was, matter of fact, for me, WrestleMania 6 was the first WrestleMania that we did in a huge arena. We did that up in Toronto at the Sky Dome, I believe. And I can't remember what the crowd was, about 67,000 or something like that. But that was my first exposure to, at that time. Since then, there've been other matches that I had, but that was the first crowd of that size that I had ever wrestled in front of. And then when we went to SummerSlam was that 90? You guys know better than I do. The SummerSlam over in London at Wembley Stadium. That was, I think, 80,000. And I think that's the largest crowd, to my knowledge, that I've ever wrestled in. You know, I don't know if WWE has ever beat 93,000. You guys have the numbers better than I do. So, but, you know, Jake was just phenomenal. It was like a night off working with that guy.
I love hearing you say that, because if you look at WrestleMania 6, your match with Jake the Snake is actually the second longest match on the card. The only match that went longer was the main event between the Warrior and Hogan. They were out for about 24 minutes. You and Jake were out for about 12, the second longest match on the card. When you're out there in front of that many people, like you said, 67, almost 68,000 people, what does 12 minutes feel like? Does that time pass quickly for you in the ring? Are you trying to get a lot of stuff in, or are you able to slow down and enjoy that 12 minutes?
Well, you know, when you only have 12 minutes, and, you know, and I'll be honest, for guys like Jake and I, who are used to telling the story, you know, it's like, you know, gosh, give me at least 20 minutes, you know, to tell a good story. So, yeah, there was a little, I think both of us felt like, you know, we can't do as much because we don't have as much time, but let's make the best of the 12 minutes we have and make it as exciting as we could. And I think we did. I think we did that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
absolutely.
So, yeah, for a guy like Jake and I, especially, it's kind of like, one of my beefs with, like with wrestling today, it's like, you know, I always feel like, you know, give them more match time. In other words, you know, instead of all the talk that goes on backstage and in a dressing room or a confrontation, you know, in the soap opera of wrestling, let's tell the story in the ring. let's give the guys a little more time in the ring and let them tell the story there, because, you know, traditionally the story was the match, and the match was done in such a way. I can remember when I was in college at West Texas State, and when Jack Briscoe came as the NWA World Champion to wrestle Dory Funk Jr. and then on another occasion wrestle Terry Funk. Oh my gosh. Now, I grew up in the business. I was totally smart to the business. And I'm jumping up out of my chair, sitting in the back, like a fan, you know, and because they drew me into the story they were telling. And it was just phenomenal. And, you know, that's what I miss. And I feel like there should be more of, and I wish there could be more of. I don't know if that makes sense to you guys, but
absolutely it does, Ted. And talk about storytelling. The following year's WrestleMania did that. And, you know, there's a lot of people online that, you know, post stuff, you know, telling jokes about Virgil sitting in, you know, at the convention selling his stuff. But let's look at it this way. WrestleMania 7 did a fantastic job of telling the story between Ted DiBiase and Virgil. And this is definitely, without question, because you were so over as a character, Ted, and such a great heel that, you know, you got the fans so behind Virgil. At one point, there's no question that Virgil is one of the top five baby faces in the company, and that has to do with the program he had with you. And that story there, the people were so invested. I remember me as a kid, I was invested. I wanted to see Virgil get revenge against the Million-Dollar Man for how horrible you had treated him all those years. Talk about that program, because I know that you have to be proud of that program and that match, because you obviously elevated him to a different level. And, you know, people might joke around about Virgil nowadays, but let's talk about that match and that angle, because I know that's something that you have to be proud of.
Yeah, and that was Virgil as a guy is a nice guy. I mean, he's here's a guy who, you know, he didn't drink and he didn't smoke. You know, he didn't party a lot. You know, he stayed in incredible shape. You know, but Virgil was one of those guys that, you know, and again, it's kind of like he really hadn't had a lot of experience as a wrestler before he became Virgil, before he was picked. And he was picked to be that guy, that character, my bodyguard, chauffeur, what have you. I mean, largely due to his incredible body and just the look he had, and he did it well. But he had not had a lot of wrestling experience, so it became up to me to lead him through this as best I could and make it the best that I could do. And of course, from the very beginning, from the first day that there was a Million-Dollar Man and Virgil, the idea was there that eventually one day Virgil is going to get tired of taking all of your crap and turn on you. And we knew we were going to do that. I mean, from day one, we knew eventually this thing is going to play out and we will do this. And I had to pretty well lead Virgil through all of it. But again, it's a matter of knowing what you have to work with and taking the things that somebody can do well and using those things and staying away from the things that they don't do so well. I mean, I did that with him. I mean, like when I talk to young wrestlers, you know, I that's what I tell them. I said, you need to, you know, if you're a student of this business, then when you get in the ring with somebody, you need to know their style. You need to have watched them long enough to know what you can do. It's kind of like, I'll give you another example, Junkyard Dog. I'm going to tell you what, Junkyard Dog, you talk about somebody good on the mic. And I mean, JYD had charisma coming out of his ears. He was unbelievable. And but he wasn't the greatest technical wrestler in the world. And so, but I made a lot of money with JYD in Mid-South. I mean, he was, I mean, you know, like they have a chant down in New Orleans, and you know, it's like, who dat say going to beat them Saints? So they think that the New Orleans Saints started that chant. That chant started with the Junkyard Dog. And the chant was, who dat, who dat, who dat say they going to beat that dog? Who dat? The fans used to yell that at me when I was standing in the ring waiting for them to introduce JYD. So it's all about charisma. And if you don't have it, you know, it's something that can't really be taught. But you take and you make the best of what you have to work with. And I thought we pulled that off pretty good. The anticipation, I mean, because people were so anxious to see him beat me up. it was good. I loved it.
Another gentleman who had a lot of charisma, who didn't wrestle but was on an outside, one of the greatest managers of all time, was Jimmy Hart. And he was involved in your next two Mania matches. WrestleMania 8, you teamed with Irwin R. Scheister, Mike Rotunda against the Natural Disasters with Jimmy Hart in your corner. The following year, you took on the Mega Maniacs and Jimmy Hart was in their corner. Both of those matches were for the tag team championships. Can you talk a little bit about those two Manias being a tag team rather than a singles match? And just on a side note, how great was Jimmy Hart as a manager?
Oh my gosh. You know, I love Jimmy Hart. I mean, absolutely. I mean, and he was one of those guys, you know, and he had it, you know, he had charisma in it, you know, and it was like, I don't know if all the, you know, a lot of the fans know, but a lot of the interest music that you hear for the guys in our era, at least, was written by Jimmy Hart. I mean, Jimmy Hart was part of, I can't remember the name of his band, but he was a musician long before he was a wrestling manager. But he was great. He was great because a good manager knows when to be there and knows when to not be there. It was kind of like, I'll give you an example that, you know, I had Sherry Martel for a while as a manager, and I would have to keep telling Sherry, I said, Sherry, sometimes less is more, you know, if you don't jump up on the apron, if you don't, you know, if you, it's like, it's kind of like, if you wait and you do it at just at the right time, just at the right moment, then the impact's going to be, it's going to have a lot more, than if you just overdo it. And so that's something that can't be taught either. And you have to learn that as a manager, and understand the game. But Jimmy was fantastic. When Mike and I, you know, when the IRS and I wrestled the two big guys, I can't remember their names now.
Earthquake and Typhoon, the Natural Disasters.
Yes, the Natural Disasters. I'm sorry, I had a senior moment. our match got cut short. I mean, we had planned out a match, and that match wasn't very long. And as my remembrance of it, it was, you know, it wasn't one of our, you know, I wouldn't say it because the time got cut, and I can't remember why, but I just remember that when we went out there, you know, we were thinking one thing, and like, you know, it wasn't very long into that match, and they said, guys, you got to go home. We got to go home. Mm. And so we had to cut it short. Enjoyed that. I mean, those guys, you know, they had their place and they were good. But then the next year, that was the, you're talking about WrestleMania 9. Wow. That was the deal with Hogan and the whole deal. Wasn't that the one in Las Vegas?
Yes, you're right.
Yeah. And outside, that was another thing. It's different. I would rather wrestle. For me, I like wrestling in an arena. That's just my preference. It's hard to explain, but I think like the atmosphere of like when the lights go down and the only light in the building is the light that's on over the ring. I think the fans are a lot more willing to express themselves. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense to you? It's kind of
that
like,
makes sense.
It's kind of like hooping and hollering and jumping out of their chairs. And sometimes when there's a bright light, I think the ambiance of that just helps wrestling. So, but it's still we had a good time and I think what we did got over.
Absolutely, it did. Both you have not had a bad WrestleMania appearance, Mr. DiBiase. All of your stuff was amazing to watch then as a child, and even to go back as an adult now. Your in-ring performance, your promos, your ring psychology, you are one of the top heels of all time, my friend. I want to thank you for coming on the show. I know you're a very busy man. I also want to thank you just for the contribution you made, not just to the world of pro wrestling, but you guys made such an impact in the lives of fans who watched the product. And in those years, the 80s, the 90s, when we were glued to our television set watching wrestling, you were one of the mainstays. You were one of the guys who was always there and always entertaining. And I always like to say, in life, if we can find what we were meant to do, it'll bring us joy. But if what we do can bring other people joy, then we're doing it right. And you brought a lot of joy to a lot of people, Mr. DiBiase. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me on, and thank you very much for that. I mean, what you're saying is so true. It's kind of like I always said: if it weren't for fans, I wouldn't have a job. And the other thing is that a lot of people get up and go to work every day. And they go to work because they have to. They go to work because they'd have to make a living and support families. But I can honestly say that I'm one guy that got up and went to work every day and absolutely loved what I did for a living. And loving to entertain the fans was a big kick for me. And people have even asked, says, What did you like better? Did you like better being a good guy or a bad guy? I said, oh, I loved being a bad guy because being a bad guy was so out of my natural character, and it was just, it was more fun. It was more fun to play that role, but again, the whole deal is the better bad guy I could be, the bigger payoff when Hulk Hogan, beats me. The bigger payoff. So anyway.
Absolutely. Well, Ted, thank you so much for taking the time again for coming on. And Ted, just want to real quick before you go off, I just wanted to make sure, is your wrist healed from our virtual signing we did a couple months back? Because remember, you were signing for over 4 hours straight. I just want to make sure your wrist is okay by now.
Yeah. I've recovered. Just let me know when we want to do it again. I want everybody to remember one very important thing. Everybody's got a price for the $1 million man.
Ted, thanks, thank you fellas. So much.
That was awesome. That just made my week. Thank you, sir.
All right. See ya.
Bye-bye.
Tommy, one of the greats, the million dollar man, Ted DiBiase. Holy cow. I could listen to him talk all day long.
Oh, absolutely, man. That was, I'll tell you what, people are going to really, really, really enjoy that interview. That was, and I was texting you while the interview was going on. That was a fantastic interview. And I mean, if that doesn't get you excited for WrestleMania coming up next weekend, I don't know what will, because he really dug deep and shared his WrestleMania memories and moments. And I'll tell you what, man, that was just a fantastic, fantastic interview.
You know, he had great mic skills back in the day, and he hasn't lost a beat. You ask him a question, and he goes on with interesting, in-depth answers. Before we move on, I again want to plug what he's got coming up, because he's got a busy schedule this week. Wednesday, April 7th, that's next week, from 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern on his Facebook page. It's facebook.com/MDM Ted DiBiase. He is doing a WrestleMania-themed Q&A, and he's going to select four questions from four fans to read out loud, to answer those questions, and then he's sending those fans a free autograph. And so if you don't follow Ted DiBiase on Facebook, jump on right after you're done listening to this, follow him, give a question, and you might be chosen to have your question not only answered, but you might get a free autograph as well. And then on April 9th, 10th, and 11th, he's appearing at WrestleCon in Tampa Bay, Florida. The 9th and the 10th will be an in-person signing, a meet and greet. And then April 11th will be a virtual signing through WrestlingCon. And then Ted is on Twitter. He's on Facebook. He's on the Instagram. All of it with the username at MDM Ted DiBiase. And so follow him on social media. What a great way to start your day, Tommy, listening to him tell stories.
Absolutely, man. You notice he laughed at the end there when I said about if his wrist is healed from his virtual signing with us. Because it's funny because his wrist really was hurting him. And it was funny because I remember at one point he had just went to it was supposed to be 3 hours and he went 4 hours. You know, at one point he had to just go to the bathroom real quick because he was sitting there for so long. And when he came back in, he was like shrugging his wrist back and forth. And it's funny because I remember the cameraman looked at me and goes, "Oh, that's going to cost you." Because the guy was just signing nonstop. I'll tell you what, he's such a professional. I mean, we had orders we do for every virtual signing, but we had orders from all over the globe for him. So many that it went 4 hours of virtual signing, and he was just a fantastic guest then, and he was a fantastic guest now. And it was absolutely great to hear his WrestleMania moments and memories and his feelings of the different performers he performed with and the backstory behind them. That was excellent, excellent interview.
I'm always impressed, whether it's your virtual signings or talking to a guy like Ted DiBiase on the show here, their memory is still so sharp. And I know these are big, big moments in people's lives, but they wrestle so many matches against so many opponents. For him to have the recollection to be able to know what venue, what opponent, you know, that match got cut short and we weren't expecting it. I love that they have excellent recall. You can tell they're passionate about the business because they like talking about it. And on a personal note, the laugh at the end. Man, if you can't – I love that he does that. He did it at your signing. He did it today. When you have a trademark laugh like that or a trademark promo or saying that you say and you put the cherry on top of an interview by ending it that way, I love it.
It's kind of like when I end the podcast with my Bushwhacker Luke impersonation, right?
You know what? I was half secretly hoping that you were just going to go into your Iron Sheik promo on Ted DiBiase and just see if you could fool him. I should have said we have a caller with a question, and you could have just. I should have faked the call in, and you could have did that.
I don't care about the money, Papa.
Oh, man. All right, here's the deal, Tommy. You just said that Ted DiBiase had a four-hour signing for your virtual signing, which is an incredibly long signing. But you are coming off of one that was even longer. You just had your virtual Mania signing on Sunday. It was all day. I got to tune in for the majority of it. I had such a good time. Tell us, how did virtual Mania go from a behind-the-scenes, behind-the-camera perspective?
It went seamlessly great. I was really surprised. I mean, when you're doing 8 hours of live streaming with multiple different talents scheduled throughout the day, you don't know how it's going to go because you don't know how many orders are going to come in while the live show is going on. So, you know, you could prepare for the – for the day of going by the advance orders in, but you don't know what's going to happen the day of. You don't know how many orders are going to come in. So you can space it out where it looks, it makes sense on paper, but then you don't know what's going to happen when it goes live. So I had Skinner and Haku from 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. I cut out all the auctions this time at the end because there wasn't enough time. So you figure if I have a three-hour signing typically on a Monday night and the last half hour is auction, you figure 2.5 hours is enough. So I had put Haku and Skinner together, and if you didn't watch it, you have to go back and see it. These guys were so funny. They had such great chemistry with each other. At one point, Haku is laughing so hard he's crying. I have to get that. I know it's not on our website yet. Well, I'll talk to Jay afterwards and get up on the site in the next day or two so you can go back and watch it, 80swrestlingcon.com. Haku is laughing so hard he was crying. And at one point, now Skinner is wearing, he doesn't look like Skinner now, obviously. He looks much different. But he's sitting there with a green Skinner shirt on. The Skinner's on his shirt. And someone in the chat room, and it just got a big laugh from everyone in the room, he says, "Who is the guy with the green shirt?" Now, he's sitting here wearing a green shirt with Skinner right on the shirt. It was just, everyone was already laughing by that point. Like, everyone was always already laughing by that point. But, I mean, that was like the straw that broke the camel's back. It was hilarious and very entertaining between those two guys. And then that got over at 11:30, and then we followed up with the Orient Express, Tanaka and Kato, who also was Max Moon, Paul Diamond. They went for 2 hours, and they hit their time perfectly as well. And we just missed the Haku and Skinner timing, by the way. We had to probably have 10 to 15 items signed off camera because we had to switch out them two for the Orient Express. So I don't want to say mistimed it because, like I said, when you go live, you don't know how many orders are going to come in. But we did pretty well. And then Jake the Snake Roberts came on at 2 o'clock. And, man, we had so many orders for Jake Roberts. And I was really nervous about all the orders that he had. One, because am I going to be able to get it done between 2 and 5 p.m.?
Right.
Two, is he going to be upset? Not upset, but, I mean, there's so many orders. And someone like that, you know, who's a top echelon guy, you know, when you book them for an appearance, it's for X amount of hours. So, you know, I let them know prior to him even coming, hey, listen, if it goes over, I'll take care of you. But he was such a professional. He came there. He said, "I'm here to work." As soon as he got there, and he was signing so quickly. And he didn't make one mistake at all. Anything that was the inscriptions, I always put a little sticky note on the pictures themselves, what color marker, who it's to, and what the inscription is. And he was signing so quick, but he was hitting everything to a T perfectly. Like, I can't stress enough what a professional he was. And he was that way also when I had him at the live 80s Wrestling Con a couple years back. He's just a true, true professional. And he had just as many people as Ted did as far as orders go. The only difference was that Ted talked a lot more than Jake did. Jake knew he had a lot going into it, so he was just signing, you know. Well, he talked a bit here and there, but he didn't get into the stories like Ted did. That's probably why it went a little bit longer with Ted. But, man, he was a true professional, just like Ted was. And going into Virtual Mania on Sunday morning, I was saying to myself and to my staff, I go, I will not do this again. There's no way I could do this again. Like, I was so overwhelmed by all the orders that were coming in. And, you know, just the time frame, like, how am I going to get this done between now and 5 p.m.? And it all came off without a hitch, man. I got it. You know, everything went great. Everything ran smooth. And I was saying before it started that I would never do it again. Now I'm looking at doing Virtual Mania 2 because it did go so well and it was so successful. And people are asking, are you going to do it next year? No, I'm going to do it way before next year. So definitely stay tuned for announcement, hopefully in the next couple weeks, of the second Virtual Mania because the first one was so much fun. Everyone loved it. We're definitely going to do another one.
I got to know, Tommy. Will Virtual Mania 2 be broadcast live from three different venues across the country?
Yeah, my house, your house. That's a good idea, though.
Well, hey, it worked for the WWF, so I thought maybe give it a try. You know, one of the best things I liked about Virtual Mania is, and this is all in my mind's eye, I'm making this up as I'm watching the show. I'm picturing these wrestlers who maybe have not seen each other in a while, just the joy that they're having, seeing each other, reconnecting, and then I'm picturing them all hanging out after the show somewhere, whether they go out to eat, whether they go up to somebody's hotel room to tell stories, but I picture... Not only did this Virtual Mania bring these wrestlers to the fans, but it also brought the wrestlers together. And so I hope they had a chance to reconnect and hang out a little bit off camera as well.
You should have saw when Haku and Skinner saw each other. They embraced so hard. They were hugging each other so hard. They must not have seen each other in a while.
Sure.
It was fantastic to see that. And, yeah, everyone was so excited. Tanaka hadn't seen Haku in a really long time, and he was really, really excited to see Haku. And yeah, it's always great when you do conventions or things where there's multiple guests. They look forward to it, man. Just like you look forward to seeing an old friend that you haven't seen in a long time. I mean,
right?
It was really cool, man. I will say this, Jay. I'm really, really happy that I have a couple weeks off as far as signings go, because I'm just so mentally drained. From wrestling collector store opening, from the wrestling collector store opening a couple weeks ago, and that I had the signing with Cowboy Bob Orton and Craig DeGeorge right in the middle of me opening the store, and didn't even get an opportunity to send that stuff out yet because Virtual Mania was that Sunday.
Yeah,
and I mean I'm just left like it's like a snowstorm, and just left with like 3 feet of snow. I was able to get out 95% of the Cowboy Bob Orton and Craig DeGeorge signings, and also started sending out some stuff for Virtual Mania yesterday. But it's going to take at least a couple weeks to get all this stuff out because there's just so many orders. So I'm happy that I have a couple Mondays off. Our next one is going to be on Monday, April the 19th, and it's going to be a really interesting one. It's going to be an extreme virtual signing. And we're going to have Shane Douglas, Jerry Lynn, Too Cold Scorpio, Mikey Whipwreck, and Simon Diamond for an extreme virtual signing Monday, April 19th. And you can get your photos now. They're up at 80swrestlingcon.com.
That is right. And then I'm assuming this weekend's Easter Sunday, I'm assuming you're closing the Wrestling Collector Sunday, and then you're closed Monday. So hopefully you get 2 days here to kind of recharge the battery before it all starts up again, man.
Yeah, brother. And hopefully I can just get this stuff out in the next couple of weeks. Because if you were at my store right now, there's like, a sea of orders from this Sunday. Because, you know, you have people all buying for Haku, buying for Skinner, buying for Orient Express, buying for Jake, plus all the items that were sent in. There are so many Jake items sent in. There's like a huge pile of stuff that needs to get sent out. So it feels good just to even take a break right now to record this episode of 80s Wrestling, the podcast.
Well, I hate to tell you, man, our show's winding down. No rest for the wicked. You're going to have to jump in that car, drive to the collector, and start packaging some orders.
Yes, I am. And like I said, at the beginning of Virtual Mania Day, I said there's no way that I would do another one of these again. But as Ted taught all of us, everybody's got a price.
That's right. Everybody's got a price for Tommy Fierro and 80s Wrestling.
Oh, yeah, man. Hey, I want to wish you and your family a very happy Easter, and I hope you guys have a great weekend, and I hope everyone out there enjoyed today's podcast, and we're going to try our best to get another guest on for next Sunday.
That would be
next
amazing,
Sunday,
man. Sorry,
next Thursday.
Next Thursday. That would be amazing. Thank you for the happy Easter wishes. Same to you and your family. Enjoy the weekend. Anything else you want to plug, or you can take us home?
I think I'm just gonna take. I'm so mentally drained, brother. I'm gonna take us home. Yeah, thank you again for everyone that listens to the podcast. Thank you to everyone that took part in Virtual Mania. Thank you everyone that comes to the Wrestling Collector Store located in Stockholm, New Jersey. And thank you everyone for I forgot to mention this, Jay. We were at one day last week. We were the number six. It was only for one day, but the number six most listened to a wrestling podcast in America. So that's amazing that we were up that high. I'm hoping that we can break the top five this week with Ted.
Well, if anyone can do it, it's the $1 Million Man for sure.
Oh, yeah. And until next week, I hope everyone has a great Easter. And we'll catch you right here next week on 80s Wrestling, the podcast.